Wednesday, 5 p.m., time for American Hit Radio.
Rolling around faster and faster.
Doesn't it seem as if, like, I guess sometimes if, I don't know, some weeks feel as though they're only like 2 days long and other weeks feel like years, you know?
Well, it depends on whether we're at work or recording radio shows.
Yeah. It's wonderful to be able to take a break in these times, and that's exactly what we hope you've been able to do. And by joining us on Wednesday and Friday evenings at 5 o'clock, we're here every Wednesday and Friday between 5 and 6, Heidi and I, to bring you American Hit Radio. On Wednesdays, we've been right now, I guess we're pushing about 5 years, I think, of doing this series, which we started out being called the Alternative Top 40, where we were going to cover 500 albums from 1964 to the present that are alternative in the sense that they never made Billboard's top 40 album list. So that would have been, you know, 500 albums at 50 weeks in a year, 50 shows. That's 10 years worth of programs right there. But we wanted to fatten it out. That wasn't enough for me.
Right. Whoops.
We decided that it would work better if we, in tandem with that list, we did a top 500 of the top 40 list, 500 albums that did make the top 40 that we consider to be among the most rewarding, the most fun to listen to, the most artistic, and the most influential. All of those things.
So, all together.
We've started, as I said, in 1964, January 1964. That was about 5 years ago. And here we are working up, and we start a brand new year. This is our first album in the year 1972. So we've gone from 1964 through 1971. That bit is complete in this series. Now we start a whole new year. 1972 is a transitional year. It'll prove to be very interesting. 1971, I think, was remarkable. And I think that 1972 is pretty darn close. Maybe it'll even prove itself to be better. It's a matter of taste, of course. But what you'll find as you move through 1972 is that this is where a lot of things began to change. Music began to take on a certain different hue at various times. And our first album for the year 1972 kind of helps to prove the point. Simon and Garfunkel ceased to exist as a band. They were obviously very much associated with the 60s.
Yes.
A big 60s act. And the band broke up just at the dawn of the 70s. And it was at this point in time when Paul Simon released his it was actually his second solo album. But he called this album Paul Simon as if to, I guess, imply that it was his first. I mean, I don't think anybody was particularly surprised by the tone of Paul Simon's post-Simon and Garfunkel debut album. Like I said, technically it's his second record, but at this point in time, virtually nobody on the planet ever heard his first album. In fact, very few, even to this day, have ever heard his first album. But when this album came out, there was this lackluster, meh feel about it when it first hit the streets, which kind of surprised me. I thought it was great. I mean, I had to become a Simon and Garfunkel fan as a kid. And it's kind of funny, but the truth is that there was a point in time when I was about 11 or 12 years old when I started to take ceramic classes from a woman down the street. And my friends and I would all basically, it was a fun thing to do on like a after school activity. We'd all go down and we'd play with the kiln and we'd, you know, make our own stuff and then we'd paint it and design it and bake it. And I bring this up because the family were gigantic fans of Simon and Garfunkel. And every single time we went to do ceramics, I'd hear their entire catalog. So I got to know the band, the duo, I should say, incredibly well without even owning an album. And eventually I did come around to buying all of them and I became a big fan. And I thought that Paul Simon was a very interesting songwriter, very interesting character. So when this album came out, you know, I thought it was great. In point of fact, I thought it bettered most of the Simon and Garfunkel catalog.
Huh.
Because on this album, Paul sounds like Paul. He got to be himself. And it was just as the singer-songwriter era started to become a thing. So Paul Simon gets to reinvent himself as a singer-songwriter, and that's what he was his entire life.
Sure.
So now he becomes a solo singer-songwriter just in the nick of time, because that's one of the major changes that starts to take place in this year.
Well, Garfunkel was just a mouthpiece for him anyway.
So. Yeah, just a beautiful voice, an angelic voice for him, you know, to sing. But critics and even a few fans dismissed the album tracks, besides, I mean, not the singles, but the album tracks as filler. But what albums with Garfunkel didn't have the same thing happening? At least here, the filler was less pretentious and infinitely more believable. Paul sounded genuinely honest on this record, and that was a giant step toward retaining relevance. And the fact that the album also has two timeless hits certainly didn't hurt his cause. Paul quite literally came into his own with this album. Now, the first solo album that we were talking about, the technical first solo album, preceded Simon and Garfunkel entirely. Paul had, after Simon and Garfunkel released their first album and it received such horrible ratings and sold so poorly, Paul left and went to England for a short while, released a solo album, which was did even worse. And it wasn't until Sounds of Silence was released with a backing track that they suddenly found themselves with a hit, and Paul had to quick return to America pronto to start supporting his new number one hit, Sound of Silence. So that's back then. Now, here we are after all of that history, and Paul feels as though he needs to prove something somehow as a solo writer, which seems odd. What's also odd is that the first single was a number one hit in South Africa, which is ironic, I think, because it was eventually South Africa that would inspire Paul to do albums like Graceland and change the direction of his solo career even further. But this was the first single, the lead single from his album called Paul Simon, released in January of 1972, climbed up to number four, and here's that first hit single called Mother and Child Reunion on American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHBC.
Only a motion way. Oh, the mother and child reunion is only
little reggae from Paul Simon. Actually, it's more than a little reggae. I mean, that was like a really amazingly authentic sounding track. There was a lot of people that were just discovering reggae at this point in time. And a lot of the North American versions of like the reggae rhythm were kind of embarrassing. Pretty, yeah. I mean, I don't want to pick on Eric Clapton, but I mean, when he did I Shot the Sheriff, it was kind of like they barely even knew how to get that feel right. And Paul Simon nailed it. But the reason he nailed it is because he went to Jamaica to do it. That was Jimmy Cliff's backup band. So, yeah, and this is exactly what I mean about Paul Simon getting it right on this solo album, where he really begins to really care. I mean, he always did, but now he's like really trying to see if he can get things to be as authentic as they really are. It's really the first him dipping his toe in world music,
right?
Which would become pretty much his calling card as he would go forward. The song itself, rather funnily, in a funny way, it was actually inspired by a Chinese fortune cookie. I shouldn't say a fortune cookie, but a dish in a restaurant. It was a Chinese dish that featured chicken with egg. And the name, and on the menu, they called it Mother and Child Reunion.
Oh, that's funny.
Inspired Paul.
Hilarious.
Analyzing the lyrics, it's a little bit darker. His dog had been hit by a car and was killed. And the lyrics are more or less conveying the relationship of his sudden realization of death. Paul didn't have anybody close to him die yet.
Oh my goodness!
So when the dog died, it had obviously influenced him, and it ended up in a rather upbeat, beautiful, big hit. Next track on the album was also a single. It was the third single from the album, not nearly as successful, but very interesting. It's a song about a character named Lincoln Duncan, who is basically trying to leave his home in the Canadian Maritime and head south to New England. It sounds to me like it is a broadening of the story that he tells on the song The Boxer with Simon and Garfunkel on the album Bridge Over Troubled Water. Very different characters, but it's kind of similar because you get it's one person struggling through experiences in their life, and it's very deeply personal and a rather lively song. And it has the same instrumentation as what appeared on El Condor Pasa from Bridge Over Troubled Water. So again, there's that connection as well. So if there's any song on this album that takes you back to the Simon and Garfunkel years, it would be this one called Duncan on American Radio 90.3 WHPC.
Room bound to win a prize, they've been going at it all night long. Well, I'm trying to get some sleep, but these motel walls are cheap. Lincoln Duncan is my name, and here's my song. Here's my song. My father was a fisherman, my mama was a fisherman's friend. And I was born in the boredom and the chowder. So when I reached my prime, I left my home in the Maritimes, headed down the turnpike for New England, sweet New England. In the knees of my jeans, I was left without a penny in my pocket. Ooh-wee, I was about destituted as a kid could be, and I wished I wore a ring so I could hawk it. like to hawk it. A young girl in a parking lot was preaching to a crowd, singing sacred songs and reading from the Bible. Well, I told her I was lost, and she told me all about the Pentecost, and I seen that girl was the road to my survival. Just later on, the very same night, when I crept to her tent with a flashlight, and my long years of innocence ended. Well, she took me to the woods, saying, here comes something, and I feel so good. And just like a dog, I was befriended. I was befriended. Oh, oh, what a night. Oh, what a garden of delight. Even now that sweet memory lingers. I was playing my guitar, lying underneath the stars, just thanking the Lord for my fingers, for my fingers.
Song is called Duncan, and like you said, Heidi, yeah, it brings to mind El Condor Pasa, or I'd rather be a sparrow than a snail, or, you know, that song. Same exact musicians, you know, Los Incas, playing the twin flute.
The pipes of Pan.
On that track. Now, Paul has a sense of humor. If you've ever seen him on Saturday Night Live, it's very obvious to see that the man can be funny and lighthearted. But in his music, he tends to not show that side very often. He tends to be very self-analytical and often, I don't want to say dark, but he can basically pull you in to a part of the world, of his own world, that can be a little bit discomforting. And on this album, he's so obsessed with by keeping things very direct and personal that he'll even name drop himself. He'll mention his wife, Peggy Harper, who he was married to at this time. Didn't last, I think it lasted maybe another 2 or 3 years after this album came out, that marriage. But you can feel that Paul is very much doing the same math that he was doing when he was younger with Simon and Garfunkel. He's doing all this self-analyzing and coming up short, coming up like without answers. And that's pretty typical. After a while, most people just figure out ways to busy themselves up. But as a songwriter, Paul used that. That was the well that he would tap into. And these next two songs, I think, convey pretty much exactly that frame of mind. The first speaks for itself. It's called Everything Put Together Falls Apart. Again, maybe the dog getting hit by the car, or maybe the fact that, you know, his marriage isn't as perfect as he was hoping that it would have been. But he moves on from there to a song called Run That Body Down, which actually does add a little bit of humor about him taking a trip to the doctor and being told straight out that, can't do what you're doing. It's not going to work. So This is where the album gets deeply personal, and this is where the critics began to divide on their opinions of the album, whether or not this was the appropriate thing for Paul Simon to be doing or not. And I don't know what makes critics think they have the right to say one way or the other. He did. It's fine. The songs are entertaining. I find them meaningful, and I also find them entertaining. So stop trying to tell people how to write. American Radio, 90.3 WHBC. Here are two more tracks from the album, Paul Simon.
Paraphernalia never hides your broken bones, and I don't know why you'd want to try. It's plain to see you're on your own. I ain't blind, no. Some folks are crazy, others walk that borderline. Watch what you're doing, taking downs to get off to sleep, and ups to start you on your way. After a while, they'll change your style. See it happening every day. Ooh, spare your heart. Everything put together sooner or later falls apart, and there's nothing to it, nothing to it. You can cry and you can lie. For all the good it'll do you, you can die. But when it's done, the police come and they lay you down for dead. Ooh, just remember what I said. Went to my doctor yesterday. She said I seem to be okay. Said, Paul, you better look around. How long you think that you can run that body down? How many nights you think that you can do what you've been that you can run that body down. How many nights you think that you can do what you've been doing?
Two songs from Danny Downer. Paul Simon. Actually, I kind of like the way that he mixed it up there, because everything put together falls apart. Obviously, is a bit bleak. But with Run That Body Down, this is, it's a bit playful, I think. It's like, it almost makes me happy when I hear it. The musicianship on it is great. I mean, I didn't know this at the time, but that's Ron Carter playing bass and Hal Blaine on drums, two absolute superheroes of their respective instruments, providing the rhythm section on that song. And that's saying something. The album itself is relatively short. Like, the next track already brings us to the end of side one, which... Again, on a personal note, this has nothing to do with anything, but at this point in time, 8-tracks were becoming prevalent. And my family had just gotten its first 8-track cartridge player. Ooh. And the way that those things worked, I guess there's no reason for anybody to even remember or know how they worked, but there was no fast forward or rewinding on an 8-track. It literally had, it was 4 stereo tracks. So, 8-track is technically right, but what they would do is they would take the 2 sides of an album and distribute the songs over 4 different sections of an 8-track. So it would average, each of the 4 sections would say average about 15 minutes. Actually, that's pretty long. Each section would probably average about 8 or 9 minutes. Times 4, that would be 36. That would be about right for this album. But I mention this because what they would do to prevent there from being extended periods of silence on an 8-track tape is they would mess up the song order. They'd put it in any order to get to the configuration so that there would be the least amount of silence on any one of the 4 tracks. So I never really knew what the proper track layout was for this album, because you'd pop in the 8-track. Now, some 8-tracks were so ridiculous that they would have to fade tracks out and then fade them back in.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't even figure out a way to do it properly because
silly.
The song lines were, yeah.
Bad format.
It was a horrible format, a really horrible format. But this album was one of my first 8-tracks that I'd ever owned, and the one that I played the most often of all of the 8-tracks that I owned. All right, let's get to the end of side one with... a toss-off song, probably one of the artist songs on the album. It's called Armistice Day on American at Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
On Armistice Day, the Philharmonic will play, but the songs that we sing will be sad. Shuffling brown tunes, hanging around. Drawn, blown out excuses were made. When I needed a friend, she was there. Just like an easy chair. Armistice Day, Armistice Day, that's all I really wanted to say. see my congressman, but he's avoiding me. Weary from waiting down in Washington, D.C. Tell that congressman, I've waited such a long time, about waited all I can. Oh, congresswoman, won't you tell that congressman?
Which brings us around to side two and the song that to this day still seems to remain a mystery to most of the people who hear it. As long as Carly Simon remains alive, people will ask her, who is the song you're so vain about? And as long as Paul Simon is alive, they will ask him, what were you doing in the schoolyard with Julio? I mean, everybody wants to know. The story is a rather interesting tale, very full of colorful characters, Mama Pajama, the radical police, the radical priest, excuse me. And Papa spits on the ground every time the name gets mentioned. So something was going on, obviously, in the schoolyard that never gets mentioned. And everybody wants to know. At one point, one in time, Paul was asked. In fact, soon after the album was released, John Landau of Rolling Stone asked him, what is it that Mama saw? And Paul just said, I have no idea what it is. Because something sexual is what I imagine. But when I say something, I never bothered to figure it out. You know, what it was. It didn't make any difference to me. I guess later on, it, you know, as time passed, the whole thought of it being anything, something as simple as something sexual, almost seems remarkable. Like, really? That's all? Like, you thought it would have been something else to create such incredible havoc with radical priests having to get him released and being on the cover of Newsweek. Like, what? For something sexual happening? It doesn't, you know. Paul later did say that it was just a bit of inscrutable doggerel, but so be it. What I love about the song is that it's got a Brazilian feel to it. It's got that cuica instrument, that squeaky drum thing.
Yes.
And one of these days I got to take lessons, man. I got to figure out how to play that thing. It's one of my favorite percussion instruments in the world. Called a squeaking monkey. That's what it kind of sounds like. But I just, it's something that I hear all the time in Brazilian music, and Paul uses it brilliantly on this track. On American Radio 90.3, WHBC, here is me and Julio down by the schoolyard. And what are they doing?
Mama Pajama rolled out of bed and she ran to the police station. When the Papa found out, he began to shout and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law. Oh, what did Mama saw?
it was against the law. Hula mama looked down and spit on the ground every time my name gets mentioned. The papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Story leak. Now when the radical preach come to get me released, we is all on the cover of Newsweek. And I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Coolest thing about that drum is that the sounds seem almost random. You know, like it sounds like it's an instrument that's very difficult to tame. It's like it has a mind of its own because it just goes all over the place. And
it's got a lot of energy.
Yeah, and you know what? And the cool thing about it is that it adds like a randomness to the track. And I think that that's like a very cool thing. Because I mean, if you put in all the sounds and everything falls in its place, you know where, you know, drums generally follow a pattern. Bass guitar follows a pattern. Guitar, rhythm guitar, of course, follows a pattern. But if you get something like that, which can play all around all of that and just zip in and zip out in the oddest of places, it adds a high level of interest to the structure of the song. Almost by happenstance, and I love the way that it's used on that track. One of my favorite singles from 1972. Okay, this is interesting, Heidi, but around this point in time, Paul Simon actually, after Simon and Garfunkel broke up, he spent a lot of the summer of 1971, teaching songwriting classes at New York University. If you were going to NYU, you could have sat in a class and had Paul Simon basically listening to your songs and critiquing them. His students at the time were Maggie and Terry Roach and Melissa Manchester. They were all in his class.
Wow.
Melissa Manchester in particular remembers that he was nervous because it was something that was unusual for him to do, I'm sure. But he would basically, you know, listen to other people's songs, dissect their lyrics, and compare them to a lot of his own work, which must have been really interesting for the students, must have been fabulous. And I just bring that up now because I think this is probably one of the more interesting non-hit songs on the album, one of the most interesting non-hit songs, I should say. It's called Peace Like a River on American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Sad starry eyed. We were satisfied. Oh, information follow us like a plane. Nobody knew from time to time if the plans were changed. Oh, 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 if the plans were changed. You can beat us with wires, you can beat us with chains, you can run out your rules, but you know you can't outrun a history train. I've seen a glorious day,
I think I love that song for the same reason that a lot of other critics may have, like, taken, you know, held back praise. It sounds like it's a demo in a way. I mean, the percussion is simple. It sounds like Paul was just laying down parts, but his guitar work is so good on that song. I mean, he does not get credit for being the fabulous guitar player that he is. And on that track, it's quite obvious exactly just what he's capable of, frankly. And it's also really interesting in terms of, like, to me, as a fan of songwriting, he manages to move through emotions on that song. He can sound resigned at one point. He sounds angry at another point. And it's rather interesting to watch somebody, you know, move through this palette of emotions in a short song, in a song that's only, you know, not even three and a half minutes long. And, you know, that's basically the sign of a fabulous songwriter. If he can literally take you on a journey in a short bit.
Economy of movement.
Exactly. Economy of movement. That's a good point. And Paul, like, pulls it off there with the simplest of backup. So, cheers to you, Paul. I mean, I still love this album. I can even tell, like, it's like I'm rediscovering it, talking about it now, you know? All right. Next up, I guess this would be considered a pair of, like, I don't know, maybe, I don't want to say toss offs, but, they're interesting in and of themselves. They're not the highlights of the album, but they are certainly interesting. The first track is called Papa Hobo, speaks for itself. And that's followed by, a relatively quick instrumental called Hobo's Blues on American Hit Radio 90.3 WHPC.
The old Detroit perfume that hangs on the highways in the morning and it night lays you down by noon. Oh, Papa Hobo, you can see that I'm dressed like a schoolboy, but I feel like a clown. It's a natural reaction I learned in this basketball town. Sweep up. I've been sweeping up the tips I've made. I've been living on Gatorade, planning my getaway. Detroit, Detroit, got a hell of a hockey team. Got a left-handed way of making a man sign up on that automotive dream. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Oh, Papa, Papa Hobo, could you slip me a ride? Well, it's just after breakfast, I'm in the road, and the weatherman lied.
So we get to wrap it up with the closing two tracks. We had mentioned Chinese food earlier about
yes.
being an inspiration
yes.
for Mother and Child
Mother
Reunion.
Child, yes.
And it's funny that Chinese food makes a reappearance on the album on this next song called Paranoia Blues, which is one of the more ridiculous songs on the record, but a bit of fun. And then it ends with a song which seems like a bit of a sense of resignation. Marital, you know, it's strange. It's a weird way to end an album. It's called Congratulations. And it sounds as though the tongue is rather sadly implanted in its cheek. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC. Thank you so much for listening. And here are the final two tracks from the Paul Simon album. We'll start with Paranoia Blues. And we end resignedly with congratulations. Take care, folks.
I got some so-called friends. They'll smile right to my face. Oh, when my back is turned, they like to stick it to me. Yes, they will. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? I fly in.
and a JFK. My heart goes boom, boom, boom. I know that customs man, he's gonna take me to that little room. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? Whose side are you on?
I got the paranoid blues from knocking around in New York City. Well, they roll you for a nickel and they stick you for the extra dime.
Once I was down in Chinatown, I was eating some men's chow fun. I happened to turn around, and when I looked, I seen my chow fun's gone. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? Whose side are you? Well, there's only one thing.